Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at AgriGold.com.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 13th day of May 2016. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. And then Carl Setzer, who's with Max Yield Cooperative out of West Bend, Iowa. They just purchased the Andersons facilities that we have been talking to for the better part of a couple of years. And now we'll start talking with Carl. And he'll take up the cash grain market with us and what things are like on the ground in the northwestern part of that state. And as we close out our time together, we'll discuss the weather forecast, too, with Eric Snodgrass from Agrible right here in town. And then, if you can stick around, stay with us for Commodity Week. Our panelists this week include Mike Zuzulo and Matt Bennett, along with Michael Cordonnier. Should be a good show right here on Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
We hear the way the numbers finished up in Chicago for this Friday afternoon. May corn today down 3 1/4, $3.82. July at 3.90 3/4, a penny and 3/4 higher. September 3.93 1/4, up 1.5. And December 3.98 1/4, up 2 cents. March corn at 4.06, up 2 for the day. May beans at 10.55, 9.5 lower. July down 7 at 10.65. August at 10.67, down 7. And September 10.59 1/2, down 7. November beans 6 3/4 lower. $10.54 1/2. January futures at 10.51 3/4, down 6.5 cents. Bean oil at 32.17, 13 cents lower. Bean meal down $5.80 at $361 a ton. And the wheat futures in the May contract for the soft red at 4.65, up 6 4/10 of a cent, or rather 6.5. And July at 4.74 3/4, up 6 3/4. The hard red July at 4.56, up 6 1/4 for the day. And the live cattle futures in Chicago finished like this. Nearby contract, June at 123.55, 97.5 cents higher. August up 12.5 lower at 118.77.5. The August feeders are 15 higher at $147.40. And the lean hogs finished the nearby contract at $76.85. That's 7.5 cents lower. Of course, you're listening to the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find us online at WILLAG.org. That's willag.org. Again, that's Illinois Public Media.
Since 1985, Stuart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at stuart-peterson.com.
Let's take a look at some of the rest of the numbers as they're trading in Chicago on this Friday afternoon at this hour. We'll take us through the energies. Crude oil in the June contract at $46.15, 56 cents lower for the day. Ethanol futures at $1.54.5, they're up 0.3 cents. Gasoline is 0.2 cents higher at $1.58.5, and heating oil is at $1.40.1, that's up 0.7 cents. Or diesel fuel, natural gas at $2.09.9, down 5 6/10 of a cent. The Dow Jones Industrial Average at 17,494, 174 points lower. The U.S. dollar at 94.6, that's up 0.477 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area tonight. Showers and thunderstorms before 11 p.m. Then showers likely, possibly a thunderstorm between 11 and 2, then a chance of shower after 2 a.m. Lows around 42 tonight, breezy with a southwest wind at 11 to 21. Tomorrow, mostly sunny skies, a high of 55. Northwest winds at 15 to 17. And Saturday, partly cloudy, a low of 37 degrees. Sunday, mostly sunny, a high of 60. West-northwest winds at 6 to 14. And on Sunday evening, partly cloudy, will drop to 42. Monday, a 30% chance of showers after 8 a.m. Partly sunny otherwise and 64 degrees. Showers are likely on Monday night, cloudy and 49. Tuesday showers, cloudy and 64 degrees. A more complete look at the weather forecast comes up at the bottom of the half hour. We'll talk with Eric Snodgrass. He's from Agrible.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois. Since 1916, Farm Credit Illinois has been helping farm families succeed, providing farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing. Farm Credit Illinois joins in celebrating the rich history of Illinois agriculture.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Friday afternoon. Mike Zuzlow is now here. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Atchison, Kansas. Good afternoon to you, Michael. How are you?
Good afternoon, Todd. Getting ready to hunker down for some thunderstorms here right now.
Oh, black skies there, I take it then.
Indeed, indeed.
All right. Well, you'll get the rainfall and maybe hopefully you won't get the hail because it's been around a bit. It's been kind of a severe weather week across the Midwest. You know, this is the height. We don't think of it so much, but this is sort of the height of severe weather. At this time of year, we usually think about that happening in March and early April because it's so windy. But this is the time of the year where we can really get some serious thunder boomers rocking through. We've had them. You're getting them today. And we're also getting some really low temperatures over the weekend. Do you have any concerns about the northern part of the Midwest?
I don't think right now we do, Todd. I do think, though, that everybody's going to be watching these low temps for Saturday and Sunday. One thing that I was told and haven't been able to verify, but it came from a fairly good meteorological source, was that the American models did get updated on Thursday night and to be more comparable with the European model. So the computers were updated and the actual model itself was updated. So a lot of shifting in the models versus Thursday, both temperature and precip. So I think it bears watching because certainly when you get down around 34, 35 degrees on the models, and if you don't have the cloud cover the models expect, then it's going to be pretty easy to go below the frost line and go into the maybe the even the 30 or 29 degree mark, especially as you get up into that area of Iowa, Wisconsin, South Dakota border, or excuse me, Minnesota, Iowa and Minnesota border. That seemed to be the triangle to really watch this weekend.
Yeah, something we'll have to keep an eye on, but apparently that the trade wasn't particularly concerned about, at least on this Friday afternoon, certainly not for soybeans. And they have put a lot of soybeans in the ground. In particular, they're way ahead in Minnesota, or were as of last Friday. I don't right recall how far ahead, but it was a number that was far enough ahead that I made note of it. So it'll be interesting to watch and see. What do you think of the marketplace today?
Probably, and as you said, we came in at 23% planted on the soybeans, and that was, you know, a pretty good number on Monday. I think the trade is probably center focused or laser focused on the crop conditions report. And once again today, like Thursday, we have seen more rhetoric and talk about both corn acres and spring wheat acres shifting to soybeans, and that has really done a good job of correcting the bean corn ratio in the post report environment. You know, we really did feed the bull in the soybean steak and eggs, if you ask me, on the report. So we had a lot of bullishness factored into the market. Doesn't mean it's all over with. I don't mean to say that. I think what really came out to me was how strong the meal market stayed throughout the week. And you really have to pretty much go below $350 a ton meal before you start to do any technical damage to any short-term trends to the upside. And, you know, you need to even go lower than that to do any damage to the medium-term trends. But I think the market readjusted post-report to the idea that we were already 5% behind last year in planting of corn on this current Monday's report, and USDA's got us up 6% versus last year. We'll probably come in at least 10% behind last year when it comes to Monday's report in the next couple, 3 days, if you ask me.
Do you have any historical context about the switch of acreage from corn to soybeans as it relates to what happens between the March 1 survey and then the June numbers that USDA will release?
Typically, there is a stronger correlation with the bean corn ratio, and that's why I think it's between the weather and the price action since March 31st, and especially since March 1, and even the USDA head NASS economist said this after the March 31st report that that is a backward-looking number because of the price changes in the new crop beans and new crop corn. But historically, you have a tendency to work along the lines of the bean corn relationship, especially after the March intentions report. I think this is one of the keystone years that you will see that happen. At least anecdotally, clients that I work with have continued to talk about that if they sell seed. And so when the USDA comes up with that is a big question, though. Will they go ahead and bring those numbers up to date in the June report? If you ask me, they should have done it this week just based upon the planting progress on Monday and this bean corn ratio as it stood, gone into the report this week.
There's been a big change in the price of soybeans. However, the price of corn, not so much. Over time, since March, I think we're up $2, and soybeans are there, were at one time thereabouts, and we've been higher in corn, certainly are at this point, but the change hasn't been that radical. That's part of the change in the ratio. I suppose that's what you've been talking about, and maybe producers turning their attention to maybe more soybeans. Do we have reason to think that there is a rally in the marketplace for corn if we don't get something to happen in the weather during the summer months?
I think there is. We talked about this a little bit on Commodity Week. We've talked a lot between you and I about the wheat market, and we just, between the ratio and the wheat, the corn just has not been able to trade very strong or positive fundamentals. Positive fundamentals like the Brazilian corn crop just not getting priced in, and it's mainly because of the wheat and the focus on the beans. I think we are trying to put in a pre-harvest low in the soybeans. This week's trade was very strong, much stronger, I think, than many thought it would be, given the ending stocks that the USDA threw at us for both 16-17 U.S. wheat ending stocks and also global ending stocks. 257 million tons for new crop ending stocks for the world number was a very burdensome number and a very big shock to the market compared to the range of estimates. However, the wheat did nothing but rally after that, and that was even with the dollar firming. And so I think the wheat really stood out to me. European wheat markets, the milling wheat in France in particular, was up almost 2% today. There is some cold weather coming into Europe as well, northern Europe and the wheat belt there. Not expected to do any damage, but the bottom line is we're trading some fundamentals that are friendly in the wheat, and it's probably been about 18 months since we've done that. So if we continue that, Todd, I do think then the corn can jump back into a more positive trade when positive fundamentals come out.
I have to ask this because I think I heard you say this. Did you just say pre-harvest low for soybeans?
No, I'm sorry, for wheat. I meant to say
okay.
We talked about that last week.
I was thinking, man, that's a long ways out.
I apologize for the soybeans. But no, the pre-harvest low for wheat is what I've been kind of counting on since the quality tour.
Okay. All right. So that puts me more at ease.
I will say, though, on the soybeans, I think you bring up maybe a Freudian slip there. I think that 305 million bushel carryover for new crop beans is going to be tough to beat on the downside unless we really have some significant weather problems. So I do think producers need to take note of that. And I think maybe the trade is taking note of that because we have thrown a lot of bullishness into the beans at this point.
All right. Hey, thanks so much. Anything else to add before we let you go?
I would say the outside markets are starting to flash a little bit of negativity here. And so it's going to be an important week for the bond market next week, the stock market next week, and I think the dollar next week. We had very strong retail sales today, the best in over a year, and that really turned the corner in the dollar. And it looks very strong technically going into the end of the week. So watch those outside markets.
Hey, thanks for being here this afternoon and for doing Commodity Week yesterday along with Michael Cordonier and Matt Bennett. It was a good show. Looking forward to having that on the air this afternoon.
I always have a great time with you, Todd. Thanks for having me.
All right. Thanks so much. That's Mike Zuzlo. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Atchison, Kansas. For many of you, you'll be able to listen to the Commodity Week program coming up in just about 10 or 15 minutes here. Others tomorrow morning. Of course, you can always find it on our website at willag.org. In today's agricultural news, new locks modernization funding is moving again in Congress after overcoming a key obstacle in the Senate. The Energy, Water, and Development Spending Bill easily cleared a stubborn legislative hurdle on Iran before heading to a final Senate vote and likely negotiation with the House on the House version of the bill. Senate GOP leader Mitch McConnell of Kentucky stressed the importance of the bill.
It will support commerce, public safety, waterways infrastructure, energy innovation, and our nuclear deterrence. posture.
Waterways Council Senior Vice President Deborah Calhoun says the bill is key to advancing Upper Mississippi River locks modernization, which still hinges on decisions by the Army Corps of Engineers.
They received a very healthy $126.5 million, and those funds are to be allocated by the Assistant Secretary of the Army for Civil Works, Joellen Darcy. Waterways Council has long requested that $10 million be dedicated to PED funding, that's pre-construction engineering design, for that NESP program, which is the Navigation Ecosystem Sustainability Program for the Upper Miss and Illinois Waterway.
Well, the bill includes $6 billion for Army Corps civil works, including locks, building, and maintenance, restoring a 23% cut the White House proposed, and ensuring full trust fund use for locks work.
Commercial operators pay a diesel fuel tax of 29 cents per gallon into that fund that's then matched by the federal government, and that money goes for new construction and major rehabilitation. So what we were seeing was some of that funding was being held back, but this Senate bill calls for full use of that in the Waterways Trust Fund funding.
The Senate bill would prevent trust fund capital projects from being deauthorized if they fail to get funding for several years, keeping projects alive that may have otherwise been derailed. Other news from Washington, D.C., ranking Democrat on the Senate Ag Committee, Debbie Stabenow of Michigan, has shared the language of her GMO labeling bill with Committee Chairman Pat Roberts, a Kansas Republican. Stabenow also says her staff has briefed groups on both sides of the debate regarding her proposal. Roberts told the Hagstrom Report that he was reaching out to the committee members to hear their concerns and that any proposal must be vetted by members of Congress and stakeholders. Roberts says the Stabenow proposal must garner more votes than his compromise bill that failed in the Senate. A spokesperson for Stabenow told the Hagstrom Report if the chairman and his caucus are serious about getting a bill finished before July 1st, it's time they make it clear what they're willing to support. Industry groups say they have yet to see the full Stabenow proposal, but many noted the need for Congress to find a compromise before the Vermont law takes effect in July. Speaking of GMO labeling, it matters less and less each day because there are companies that are labeling GMOs. Bottles of Pepsi were recently found sporting the phrase, partially produced with genetic engineering. The Consumerist reports Pepsi, along with sister company Frito-Lay, plans to label products on a nationwide basis. The company says the partial terminology can be used on any product that uses less than 75% of ingredients from GMO sources. And finally today, farm groups are already looking ahead to the next farm bill. Agricultural committee groups are starting meetings regarding issues facing agriculture that the groups deem important for the next farm bill expected in 2018. The meetings are starting early because agricultural groups were not on the same page when the push began for what became the 2014 bill. The 2014 farm bill started as a rushed effort in 2011, and the process dragged on through that year. A lobbyist with the ASA, the American Soybean Association, says if we want things to come out differently the next time around, then we need to prepare for it. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Well, up next, we'll stay in Washington, D.C. and talk about the appropriations bill. Lawmakers in the U.S. Senate are considering appropriations bills this month. Kansas Republican Senator Jerry Moran chairs the Agriculture Appropriations Subcommittee. Moran explains what the committee is considering.
We will pay a lot of attention trying to make certain that conservation funding is available. We will fight off any amendments that are intended to diminish the value of crop insurance. We'll work to get the Food and Drug Administration to be as common sense oriented as we can in their efforts to regulate food safety. And so it's a lot of just trying to bring some common sense to the process.
Moran says part of the appropriations process is to block spending for harmful regulations.
A reason that you want to do appropriation bills is because we need to prioritize spending. But one that's often forgotten is we want to be able to tell various agencies inside and outside of agriculture that they can't spend money to do what we would consider very damaging things.
That's Senator Jerry Moran of Kansas. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Well, time to check the cash grain market now. We're joined by Carl Setzer. He's at Max Yield Cooperative out of West Bend, Indiana. Max Yield just purchased the Anderson's facilities that we've been talking to for a couple of years. Thanks, Carl, for joining us. We do appreciate you being along. You handle what kinds of things at Max Yield?
Hey, thanks for having me here. Yeah, we're, you know, a co-op out here in North Central Iowa. We've got 17 grain locations that we have that we take in, mostly corn and soybeans. I got a few that take in some small grains, but not very much. Our trade territory runs from with locations basically butting right up to the west side of I-35 that runs north and south here, and goes pretty much all the way over to a little bit past Highway 71, almost over to Highway 60. So the pretty good chunk of the north, northwest, north-central region of the state here we cover. Like I said, handling mostly corn, soybeans, a little bit of small grain, and, of course, agronomy, energy, and then our precision ag department that we have.
And do you advise the farmers, or are you the purchaser? What do you do?
Good question, Todd. I work with mostly with, we have a grain solutions team that goes out and contacts our clients. I provide market information, market analysis. We have our own internal website. It's maxyieldgrain.com that I put commentary on 3 times a day plus a weekly review. Mostly I spend my day running risk management for both the company and for our clients, whatever they need. We tailor everything to an individual's cash flow needs. So rather than have the one cookie cutter approach to all of the marketing plans, we individualize everything here.
What do you see at this point in your area as the biggest fundamental things that producers need to be paying attention to?
Right now, one of the big things we have is across our trade territory is the localized corn demand. We have, you know, the big thing right now is, you know, we're getting most of our corn is planted in good shape coming up. We have a little bit of a weather delay probably over more so in our western locations. But we're looking at the corn versus soybeans, and I'm telling guys, you know, market them all, whatever you're going to plan for your position, your operation, not so much what the guy across the fence is doing, but what works for you and what works for your cash flows. The big thing we've seen out here is the simple fact that commodity values have dropped, and, you know, going into the spring planting season here, it wasn't so much what crop is going to be most profitable, it was going to be which one is going to lose the least amount of money. And with the change in the market dynamics, we're seeing a little bit heavier flow towards soybeans right now.
And are farmers actually making that switch?
What we're seeing out here is the acres that were, and I call them the uncommitted ones that did not have the fall applied fertilizer put on. We're seeing some of those switch over to soybeans, but it's, I would say, less than 5% of our acres out here. Our local corn demand across our territory runs right at 850,000 bushels per day, and that's from feed and ethanol mostly. And when you take that out, our corn demand base runs pretty strong out here.
Carl, thanks so much. Carl Setzer, of course, is with YieldMax, and they're in West Bend, Iowa.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support of the Friends of WILL, and Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
It's National Apple Pie Day. Apples are thought to originate in Asia, where its wild ancestor is still found today. Apples were brought to North America with the colonists in the 1600s, and the first apple orchard in the New World was said to be near Boston in 1625. On this day in agricultural history in 1878, Joseph Henry died. one of the first great American scientists. Henry was the first director of the Smithsonian Institution, where he established the foundation of a national weather service. In 1884, Cyrus Hall McCormick died. He is generally credited with the development of the mechanical reaper. His father had worked unsuccessfully between 1809 and 1816 to develop a reaping machine. He followed his father's lead and by 1831 was able to publicly demonstrate a functional machine able to cut a 4-foot swath. In 1834, he patented his design. To defend his patent against a competitor, in 1843, a widely publicized competition was held between their rival products, in which McCormick's machine was judged the better. He sold 29 harvesters that year, 50 the next, and by 1848, he was in business with a factory in Chicago, Illinois, able to produce 500 machines. With production line assembly within a few years, McCormick dominated the market. And in 1958, Velcro was trademarked. The hook loop fastener was invented in 1945. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm Todd Gleason, joined now by Eric Snodgrass from Agrible. Thanks, Eric, for being with us. Let's get started because there's been a lot of weather across the whole of the Midwest.
Yeah, we got hit in Illinois pretty hard on Tuesday and Wednesday. Tuesday had these beautiful, you know, from a meteorologist perspective, these beautiful supercell storms that kind of went across southern Illinois. And then when they got into Kentucky, they produced several tornadoes, 27 reports of tornadoes, and caused quite a bit of damage across Kentucky. And then we had Wednesday that kind of followed this up, where the southern half of Illinois saw numerous wind and hail reports as a series of squall lines kind of passed through. In fact, one went right along the I-72 corridor, produced some hail in Monticello that was measured at 2 inches, came across Champaign, did some wind damage, some local wind damage. We saw some winds in nearby areas approaching 80 miles an hour. So this was a pretty significant severe weather week. But remember, you know, it is May. May 13th, May 12th, you know, that time of year is the peak in severe weather activity. But if you kind of just step back, let's say, hey, where are we compared to average? Well, in terms of tornado counts, we're at about 75% of normal. So this has actually been a down year in terms of tornado damage and tornado count across the United States. But in terms of hail and wind, we're actually above average. We're actually at about 101% of average. So very active year for two types of weather that have a big impact on ag, that being hail and wind. And I'll tell you, today is going to be no stranger to that, because we've got a severe threat that's going to stretch from Kansas to Missouri into parts of Illinois and Iowa. And for all of those, all of you that are listening here in Illinois, I tell you, this evening, keep an eye on the radar. Be watching for a storm system becoming out of the northwest. And probably looking like a large kind of squall line of thunderstorms, maybe around 6, 7 p.m. Keep a real close eye because that's going to certainly pass through. And as it does so, brings us another round of rain. And honestly, we've been pretty wet across most parts of Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, even Kentucky, even pushing toward the mid-Atlantic. But one place that's been dry, Todd, has been Missouri. Interestingly enough, they had a nice start to their growing season, but latest drought monitor just came out. And boy, it looks like Missouri is a little bit drier than average, and they're starting to creep, you know, some drought into some certain regions. Now, will it have a big impact on Missouri ag? It won't if regular rains return anytime soon. But why I bring it up is because drought likes to creep to the east. So we got to keep an eye on this, because Illinois is certainly to the east of Missouri. So that's kind of where we start, you know, with this forecast.
Good place to start. Let's finish up with the forecast for next week, please.
Yeah, so tomorrow's going to be a bit of a shocker. You know, it's graduation here at the University of Illinois, and temperatures are going to be trying to get into the mid-50s. So after today's so beautiful, tomorrow's going to be cool. And what that means is that a cooler air mass is moving in. We're expecting lows over the weekend to be in the high 30s in central Illinois. Now, because it's going to be in the high 30s here, we know that to our north, temperatures are typically cooler. And right now, there are frost and freeze warnings out for parts of North and South Dakota, parts of Minnesota, and that'll translate east over to Wisconsin and Michigan, you know, over the end of the weekend. So we got to say, is this going to have a big impact on ag? When it comes to corn, the answer is no. That's simply because we got to get all the way to V5 before the growing point of the corn is kind of out of the ground and vulnerable. But I did look up the USDA planting progress for soybeans in North and South Dakota. And South Dakota's at 10%, North Dakota's at 25%. And if any part of that soybean crop has emerged, we could be looking at some damage. And given the fact that the soybean price has been rallying over the last several weeks, this could be another reason for those prices to continue to creep up if there is some damage. We got to keep an eye on that.
That's Eric Snodgrass from Agribull.